The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.
Smart, sexy, kinky, fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm so glad you joined us today. Today, my guest is trans advocate Janet Mock, and we are going to get to her in just a minute. But first, I want to share something that I'm really excited about. If you listen to the show, you already know that the second annual Feminist Porn Conference is happening. It's at the University of Toronto, April 5th to the 6th, and it's presented by the Mark S. Bonham Center for Sexual Diversity Studies. It happens simultaneously to the Feminist Porn Awards, and it's, you know, an amazing event, if I do say so myself. But what I want to tell you that's news is that I have made accessibility a top priority. And as a result, I am proud to tell you about the following. First, we have moved the conference to a new venue on campus. This venue is absolutely accessible. It's an accessible building with an accessible entrance, accessible bathrooms, and all the rooms used for the conference are accessible to both presenters and audience members. The building has an elevator for people in wheelchairs and people with limited mobility. I am also declaring the Feminist Porn Conference a low or no scent event. Out of respect for people with multiple chemical sensitivities, we ask that all attendees please refrain from wearing and using perfume, cologne, and scented products. In addition, we are going to provide sign language interpretation for any and all sessions to those who need it upon request. But we need to know in advance that you need it so we can set you up. And I know some of you out there have other accessibility concerns and issues and needs. And what I want you to know is that it is a priority. And I want you to email us directly so that we can try to the best of our ability to make this the most accessible conference we've ever had. I hope you'll join us in Toronto, but at the very least, spread the word about our commitment to accessibility. And hey, we're live. So if you want to call and talk to me or Janet Mock or tell us about how your day was, really, we're open to anything, people. You can give us a call at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. And there's a very good chance you'll win a prize because, as you may know, every week we give away a Sports Sheets prize to one lucky listener. You can have a chance to win by calling us, or you can post a question or a comment on our Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio or on Facebook.com/AskTristan. You can even send us an email, Tristan@puckerup.com, and you're automatically entered to win. So call, talk to us. We want to hear from you. 866-472-5788. You got to listen to the whole show because we announce the winner at the very end. Let me tell you about today's guest, who I'm very excited to have on the show. Janet Mock is a writer who founded the Girls Like Us Project. That's hashtag Girls Like Us, a media visibility campaign for trans women. Her memoir, Redefining Realness, My Path to Womanhood, Identity, Love, and So Much More, was published this month by Simon & Schuster. Since sharing her story in 2011 through Marie Claire magazine, Janet has been featured in the HBO documentary The Outlist and appears regularly on MSNBC's Melissa Harris Perry. She currently serves on the board of directors for the Arcus Foundation and has been recognized by the Sylvia Rivera Law Project, the Center for American Progress, the Women's Media Center, and Good Magazine for her work. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Janet.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first, I have to tell all the people out there why they need to run out and buy this book. I love this book. I devoured this book, and everyone out there should read it. It is truly, it's riveting. It's angry and it's tenderhearted and it's scary and it's exciting. And there are things that are surprising. And I feel like it accomplishes a whole bunch in a not that long package. So I want to say bravo to you. And I have so many questions about the book. I sort of don't know where to start. So I'm going to start at the very beginning. Which is that you have this disclaimer at the beginning, which I've seen for other memoirs, where you basically say, listen, this is my story, and I've tried to recount events and conversations as best I could. In some cases, I went back and talked to people to try to, you know, clarify what they said. But, you know, this is my story. Then you go on to say, oh, and by the way, this is just one story. I mean, you make a point of saying this is not everyone's story. Why was that important for you to say right up front?
I think usually this, well, first of all, thank you so much for your kind words about my book. I really appreciate that. But I think you're referring to the author's note. And usually that section is something that they've made memoirists kind of say for legalese in a sense. And I wanted to talk about definitions in that space, but also how I crafted my memories and what memories were true and whose names were, you know, made up and all this kind of stuff. But then I also wanted to take it the next step further and discuss like the privilege of access that I have, right, from educational privilege and also being able to speak English and articulate my thoughts and all of these kind of things. And so I wanted to make sure that I made that statement up front so that people can know what perspective it was coming from and that it is very much my path, right, my story, my experiences. And though I speak about some of the shared experiences of trans women, specifically young trans women of color, my experiences don't mirror everyone's experiences. And I think that that's the struggle I've always had with being someone who's heard on such a large level is representation and the problematic nature of representation. And so for me, I wanted to say up front that I'm just one person who has access to telling her story. My story is no more important than any other young trans woman of color who is out there telling her story, who may not be able to have access to quote-unquote Simon & Schuster or some publisher, and that all of our stories matter.
Yeah, yeah. And it's complicated, and you're complicated, and I feel like that is a thread that runs throughout this story. There's a part in the beginning where you say something like, you know, I've always known, or I've known since I was four, and then I didn't know it all. So, in other words, you make these statements, which, in fact, for people who've read, you know, trans coming-of-age novels or memoirs sound familiar, but then immediately you sort of challenge yourself and say, wait, let's unpack that. Let's interrogate this. It's not like a clean line from here to there.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that I've read in so many other, you know, I've also been a student of these memoirs, reading them, learning about myself and the things that kind of intersect with my own experiences and parallel there. But at the same time, I realized that quote, that soundbite, right, I always knew I was a girl, was, as I write, it's like this loud, this defense, this tool against or shield against the wider world that tells me that who I am is wrong and incorrect and unnatural, right? And so for me, I try to, like, you know, add some nuance there to say that though I am fully me and I'm comfortable with saying that I am a woman and that I grew up as a girl, that there is some messiness there and there was some times of uncertainty, even though I'm certain about who I am. And so though I've come to this place of certainty and groundedness and presence in who I am, doesn't mean that there weren't times when I was, you know, unstable and wobbly about my experience, and that it does go up and down and up and down and up and down. It's not this straight through line from quote unquote before and then all of a sudden after, which tends to be like the themes of all of a lot of memoirs, trans memoirs at least.
And I think it brings to mind this notion also that, like, do we all really know who we are? I mean, somehow I think trans people are being held to some other standard, which is like you had to have known and you had to have been 100% sure, which people who are not trans are not held to that same standard. We're all like finding ourselves mm-hmm. all the time,
exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You couldn't have said it better. It's exactly that. This is a story of self-revelation, right? Revealing yourself first to yourself and being comfortable to open up to other people. And I think that because trans people are often checked and told that you must be quote-unquote crazy or quote-unquote delusional to go on this journey, we tend to then fight back by saying, no, I'm so sure about this and I'm certain about who I am. And we try to defend that we're super sure and super certain in order to get, from medical gatekeepers to being able to change your name. This whole process, you have to constantly kind of defend who you are. And so then it erases nuance. What about those moments when we're just like, I don't know. I'm a little confused. Maybe I am this. Maybe I am that. You know, and those little nuances, I didn't want to erase them just because I'm so sure now. You know, and so that was very important to me to be honest about that perspective, because I think there's so many trans people who are not at that quote-unquote after stage or who haven't come to the point of self-revelation to really reveal themselves publicly and openly. I wanted to give them something to say, you know what, though I am so sure now, there were times when I wasn't, and that's the truth, and I think that the truth can, you know, so cliche, set us free.
But this is a piece in your book which I feel that not every trans memoir I've read has done, which is this really resonated for me on a totally different level, because there is something about the story, and there's so many great details and tidbits of the story, and we'll get into the story, but there's something about it that does have a kind of universal feeling of just the process of becoming oneself. And I'm wondering if you, like, if you deliberately sort of wanted to speak to this really wide audience, or if you even knew, like, or assumed who might be reading this.
I think that's a great question. For me, I was trying to be as specific as possible about my experience. And, you know, my editor, she was very clear. She said, I think that your audience are three separate people, you know, and obviously some of it overlaps, but she said, you know, it's girls growing up like how you grew up, right, who share almost your similar experience. Then there's people who, you know, feminists, social justice people, gender justice people who are invested in this kind of work and who want to learn more about trans people, blah, 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 and so that's another audience. And then it's just the wider kind of opening up to everyone audience, right? And so that's why the text has definitions and kind of accessible language, so that I'm not using anything that's kind of too over people's heads, I guess. It's very important for me to be that bridge between my own sense of education, but also knowing that most people still don't understand these issues and the terms that we tend to use in these social justice bubbles. So for me, my whole goal was to write the book for girls growing up like I did, because I grew up loving books, but none of the books completely reflected all of my intersections and all of me. So I wanted to create that book. And so it's interesting to me, like, that's the most surprising feedback, is that people like saying that I feel like there's like a shared girlhood and things that I understand, and, you know, cis women saying the same thing to me. And it's just like, oh, wow, that's not how I wrote the book. Like, that wasn't intentional in that sense, but it's interesting that the truth, no matter what, is always ends up being very much universal in some sense, even though it's very, very specific to my own experience.
Well, the truth is an important thing that we need to talk about, but we have to take a break first. We're going to hear from our fabulous sponsors, including Good Vibrations. The special running right now at Good Vibrations is that through February 24th, with any purchase of $50 or more, you can get a free ground shipping and a free disco stick vibrator. I'm just going to say that reminds me of something in Janet Mock's book, and I'm just going to leave it at that, okay? It has to do with the car. Okay, you can also get 20% off all Laylo products. Go to goodvibes.com, and while you're there, whether it's February 24th or later, you can always use coupon code Tristan for 15% off your order. Coming up, more with Janet Mock talking about her new memoir. Stay with us.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423. Or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Hi, I'm sexuality educator Sunny Megatron. Much of my work is devoted to helping people achieve bigger, better, more satisfying orgasms. I love the Aneros EV. I have more intense orgasms while wearing it. And because EV helps me strengthen my pelvic floor muscles, stronger orgasms even when I'm not. EV is a tool and a toy all in one. To learn how EV can help you on your quest for bigger, better, more satisfying orgasms, visit Aneros.com or SunnyMegatron.com.
Enjoy better sex today. Find Evie and the entire line of prostate massagers on Aneros.com. You can get 15% off and free shipping on orders over $75 by using the coupon code BETTERSEX.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today we're talking with Janet Mock, the author of the really incredible memoir, Redefining Realness. And we're live. So if you want to talk to Janet Mock or tell us about how you define realness, give us a call at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. I also want to remind you, a great place to be in March, well, is indoors. But an even better place to be is at Catalyst Con East, a fantastic sex-positive event happening just outside Washington, D.C. You can find out about presenters, sessions, keynote speakers, and more at catalystcon.com. Use coupon code Tristan for $10 off your registration. So, Janet, this book details your life. You were born in Hawaii. You moved to Oakland, California, where you lived for many years with your father. Then you moved to Texas for a bit, and then you moved back to Hawaii. I'm wondering where you consider home.
Yeah, it's so interesting, right? Like, as a kid, you have no control over where you're going to live. Just people, like, grab you and say, we're going to go here and there and there. And so I think for me, Hawaii has always been home for me. I think it's really where I found my voice as a young person and really found myself and my identity. So I would say definitely Kalihi in Honolulu, Hawaii, on the island of Oahu is always home. But I think now New York has become this real home for me. It's kind of my total place of choosing. I choose to be here.
in the story, it really did feel like a lot shifted for you when you came back to Hawaii as a young teen or tween. So why do you think that was?
Why do I think what was? I'm sorry.
That things shifted for you once you came back to Hawaii.
Oh, my mother and the culture. It just, the Hawaii's culture is just, there's a space beyond the binary, right? Beyond male, female, beyond man, woman, boy, girl. And there's a space in the middle where you could completely just, especially if you're a feminine person, feminine people, was completely fine to be feminine within a quote-unquote male body. And so, though there's still teasing and all of that stuff, there was an openness to it, or at least a tolerance, right? And so also just being under my mother's care, she's completely different than my father, you know, even though they have a lot of parallels, right? You know, the book talks about drug abuse and their issues with partners and, you know, their intimate partners and all of that stuff. But, I think it's just the environment of being in Hawaii in a space that kind of celebrates diversity, not only in, culture, but also in gender expression, at least.
And it did seem at some point like everyone was going with the flow. I mean, there's a middle section there where it's like, well, isn't this a freaking after school special for trans kids? Like, everyone's down with the program, except that one very mean assistant principal. Everyone else is totally there with you.
That's so funny to me. That is so funny. It feels like that, right? But I think with my family, there was so much other stuff going on. My gender was like the least of people's worries, you know? And so I think that, like, it's putting in that context of, like, we were dealing with poverty and homelessness and drug addiction and all these other things, and also, like, five kids in a home with, like, two teen mother sisters. And, you know, my wearing lip gloss and my hanging around with my trans girlfriend wasn't really much of a concern to people. It wasn't top of mind and priority. And I think that's why I also had a lot of freedom to kind of just do what I want and run the show without consulting with people. So it kind of went, you know, there was kind of a win-win, I guess, a little bit there.
Well, this is another thing to me, that there's this sort of striking contrast, because you do talk about some really devastating circumstances of poverty, of homelessness, of survival. At one point, this quote jumped out at me. You write, "I was ashamed to define our situation. I was living it, surviving it, and had no strength to spare to define it." That was, you know, a little heartbreaking. And yet, you had this boldness about you. You had this sense of, I can do it. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to do it. Where do you think that came from?
I think that came from having lived examples of trans women in my life. You know, I had a very diverse portrait of women along. I wasn't the only trans person in my life. Wasn't the only trans woman there. So for me, it was like, I can pick and choose and steal stuff from these women, right? Steal wisdom, steal experience, steal skills. You know, just from meeting my best friend, Wendy, as soon as we met and clicked at 12 years old, she saw me for who I was, and she listened and affirmed me and helped me, right? From tweezing my eyebrows to helping me, you know, steal clothes from from the thrift store. You know, like, I had all these women around me who showed me the way. And so for me, it made it easy for me, even in points of, like, uncertainty and, like, depression, to steal kind of the practicality of it. And I think that's what we're talking about with the, I didn't have strength to define my situation. There's practicality behind that, because these women built a whole system that I could just tap into, a system of resources that enabled me to find myself and be myself completely.
Wendy did seem like the Shirley to your Laverne, or maybe you're like the reverse. I can't quite decide. Well, we've got a caller. I'm really excited. Kit from Washington, D.C. Hello, Kit.
Hi, Tristan.
Hi.
Thanks so much for having me on. So my question for Janet is, do you think that for those of us who identify as trans and don't want to take hormones or, you know, surgery or anything like that, you know, beyond, like, presentation that, you know, is less invasive, for lack of a better word. My question is, do you think that there will be a time when society can be open enough to trans people to not, for those of us who don't want to alter our bodies, to not feel a societal pressure to do so? You know, like, of course, people should alter their bodies if that's what they want to do and what makes them feel best about themselves. Yeah, that's my question.
I think it's a powerful question. I completely believe in body autonomy and self-determination and self-definition, and our bodies are ours and our identities are ours, and it's for us to decide what we want to do with it or not do with it, you know? And so I hope that when we are, well, my goal is to continue to push forward on those messages and not so much about just speaking to specifically about certain medical procedures or things that right. I've had done, quote unquote. You know, I would rather discuss like us having the freedom, right, and our freedom to be respected, to have those options, whatever they are, and not to feel that pressure to have to conform or change our bodies based on someone else's ideals of what we should, quote unquote, look like.
Thanks so much for your call, Kit.
Thank you.
We've got another listener who wrote into us via email. Tia says, "Dear Janet, I loved your book so much, especially the parts about growing up in Hawaii. Can you talk about your experience with differences in living there versus the mainland? And what do you miss most about home, especially what are your favorite foods?"
We got a local person on the line.
This is what people want to know. Yeah, I mean, this is what people want to know. They want to know what you want to eat.
Well, the first thing I do when I get home is I run to Foodland and I get ahi poke, which is like ahi sashimi with seaweed in it and limu and soy sauce. I get that and I have it over rice. Or I run to Zippy's and I get a fried chicken, chili chicken mixed plate, we call it. So it's like this special chili with fried chicken. It's so good. And then for dessert, I go and run to Leonard's to get malasadas. And my number, I guess the biggest difference between Hawaii and the mainland, I guess for me, my experience would be Hawaii and New York City. I think there was a different sense. In Hawaii, I grew up around all people of color. So it was very interesting for me. It was a different experience growing up where we weren't centered around whiteness, and that was interesting for me, whereas to be not from Hawaii was a default, like it was something was wrong with you, you weren't from Hawaii, and usually it was people who were not Hawaiian or Filipino or Samoan or brown, I guess, weren't that, then you were kind of outsiders in terms of growing up in Hawaii. And so that was the biggest difference for me. And then like when I came to New York, it was like the centering around whiteness that I think is more of a mainland thing, it feels like. And so that's something that I had to have a different racial consciousness when I moved to the mainland. That was interesting for me.
Although I do remember you talking about how people did label you, although you're mixed race, labeled you black within Hawaiian culture, that you were black to people.
Yeah, exactly. So that's that same kind of not being local, right? I didn't look like how my mother and my brother Jeffrey, who's also part half black, who didn't, you know, but they looked local, so they had a different acceptance. And so I remember my first month in Hawaii, me and my brother Chad were battling that. We spoke with Southern accents. We didn't know Hawaiian pidgin. All of these kind of things that were constantly like checked, like, are you really local? But there still was this anti-blackness there, just as much as also anti-whiteness there in Hawaii. And so it's just interesting. It's interesting.
another piece of your kind of outsider insider status.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to take another break. We have so many questions to get to. Keep those questions coming on Facebook, on Twitter. I'm compiling them. Well, not me, Raymond. Raymond, the superstar, is compiling them. You can also call us at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. Super special shout out to one of our great sponsors, Astroglide. You know I love the butt sex, people, and Astroglide has finally made a sensitive skin gel with no potentially irritating ingredients, no parabens, no glycerin, made with lots of natural ingredients. Go to astroglide.com to find out about it and their entire product line. Stay with us, more with Janet Mock when we return.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Looking to add something fun and different to your sexual experiences? Then try Astroglide X, premium silicone personal lubricant. Astroglide X contains a unique blend of high-quality silicones that provide a silky smooth experience unlike any other. Astroglide X is also waterproof and perfect for water play. Not only does Astroglide X last longer than all water-based products and is hypoallergenic and latex safe, it's even great for massage. For more information and a free sample, visit astroglide.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423. Or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We are having a fantastic conversation with Janet Mock, the author of her memoir, Redefining Realness. And I want to talk more about that, but first I want to give a shout out to WeVibe. WeVibe 4 is brand new and completely redesigned. Go to WeVibe.com to find out more. It's real. WeVibe is. That's how I'm tying it in, people. So just go with me. So Janet, when some people write memoirs, they become kind of accidental activists. And that may have been you before the Marie Claire piece. But clearly in writing this memoir, your activism to me is very conscious and very apparent. There are moments in the text which you very expertly kind of weave in information for your reader. So you may be telling a story about something that's very specific to you about your transition or hormones or something. And then you sort of pop up in the narrative and talk about barriers to medical access and treatment or legal issues for transgender people. And so it seems quite deliberate, and therefore I'm not surprised that we got a lot of questions from listeners that are political. I want to start with the first one, which is via email from Ethan, who writes, as far as progress in America goes, do you think electing trans and queer folks to office so that we have more political representation is more important than visibility in popular culture, or vice versa?
I don't think that that's a question that should be, I don't think that we need either or, we need both. I think that we all, there's very different, and with movement making, there's very different roles. You need people in pop culture who are pushing media visibility, but also pushing the agenda and actually having really strong talking points that actually make people care about these issues that are very complicated, right? So how do you make them digestible? That's also a skill and a talent that we also need, just as we need policymakers who are pushing it forward in that sense, just as much as we need grassroots people who are helping day-to-day, lived, daily access issue work like be accessible to trans people on the ground. And so I think we need all of it. I don't think we can get rid of one without having the other.
Now, even more serious, a listener on Twitter, at BFlood28, says, Janet, how do you address white supremacy in the trans community?
I do that by speaking and centering my work around young trans women and or young trans women of color. That's how I address it. I'm unapologetic about the fact that my experiences mirror poor, low-income trans women and trans women of color. That's how I combat that. And I know that other people choose to do their work other ways, but that's how I choose to do mine. I bring the marginal center, and I center it in my work.
And related on Twitter, listener Ryan C. says, how can allies help? I want to be part of redefining realness. I don't know where to start.
That's a big question, right? And I think that that's kind of been a discussion people have been having for a very long time with being an ally. I think we do ally. We do ally. We see it that way. How do I do ally? We see it as an action. I think that will help us. You know, it's a process of continual action and continual learning and education. That's how you do allyship. I think you work in partnership with people who are already doing the work. You educate yourself and you give over your talent, skills, and money to further push forward liberation for people that you want to work in partnership with.
This is also related, a question from Emily by email. I'm a cis queer white woman who teaches in high school. I teach a small class on feminism through an intersectional lens. We started the aforementioned class with each member articulating our own personal understanding of feminism. Janet, how do you describe feminism? So many good questions tonight, people. Just want to put that out there. I love my listeners.
I think, how do I define feminism? I think it's a movement to, as Bell Hooks said, it's a movement to end sexist oppression. And I think that cis people can be just as sexist as trans people can be just as sexist. So I think that if we're talking about feminism, we're talking about gender liberation and people having the right to do what they want with their bodies, to declare their identities, and to determine themselves without the restriction of anyone's like ideals or expectations of them based on, you know, made-up gender expectations.
Let's talk about passing, because I know you have a lot of feelings about it. There's a little video where you talk about passing, and it got picked up by Upworthy, so it's gone viral. There's been a lot of traffic and discussion around it online this week. What do you have to say about passing?
I think I say it all in the book. I really do say it all in Redefining Realness. It's such a tricky topic, and I think that even that 2-minute video that I do, and I think I do a good job at trying to talk about it quickly to make it accessible for people on the internet to just want to digest. I'm really grateful that Upworthy picked it up, but I hope it also pushes people to want to read the text and see my complicated relationship with it and how the way that I looked was one of the first things that other trans women noticed about me and gave me, told me that I was valuable because of that, because I was quote unquote attractive and could be seen and perceived as a cis woman, as if that's the ideal in our society. And so there's a lot of complication and nuance there. And but I think for me, the soundbite that it seems that everyone's saying is that me reframing it and saying that I don't feel as if I'm passing, I'm merely being myself. And so I would rather us just all be able to just be whoever we know ourselves to be, and that's not passing, it's just living our truth.
And I think you say this in the book, and it's very true, which is, you know, I can't control how people perceive me, but I can control about how I use that privilege or that entitlement. Right? So people may put that on me and say, oh, you passed, so you don't understand my experience, or you this or that or whatever. But your very act of coming out and identifying as trans, I think, directly confronts that.
Yeah, and that was one of those decisions that I made. You know, I was 27 years old when I made that decision. I was just like, I'm going to strip that away and publicly proclaim that I am a trans woman and there's nothing shameful about being a trans woman. That was important for me to do that. And that's what helped me, you know, launch hashtag Girls Like Us and do that campaign to live visibly as trans women, because we're taught from when we're very young to be secretive about it, to hide ourselves, to be shameful about it, and we internalize all of these things from everyone gender policing us for so long that we end up doing it to ourselves, and it becomes this whole cycle of like isolation and, you know, weird skewed images of self, and the pop media sends us all these messages. And so for me, like, I wanted to wear it proudly so that other girls who may have the resolve at a younger age to live visibly can do that, because they feel that there's examples of people who are doing it and are living happily and, you know, speaking truth to power about these issues. So, yeah.
Okay, I think I want to take another break, because I'm ready to hit you with another really hard question, but let's not do it right before our commercial break. You know what I mean? Like, I want to dig into it. So, let's take a break. Hear from our great sponsors who make this show possible. Coming up, we are going to talk about what I think is some of the most brave writing in this book. And I'm going to ask more of the tough questions, but also some fun ones too. So don't go anywhere. More with Janet Mock on Redefining Realness after the break.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe. Share the pleasure.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423. Or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We've been talking today with Janet Mock, the author of Redefining Realness. This is your one and final opportunity to talk to Janet Mock, people. No, probably not. But to talk to her and me at the same time on this show today, for example. You can call us at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. Keep those tweets coming. Your questions are fantastic. Janet, there's a lot of brave writing in this book. There is a lot of difficult material in this book that's undeniably difficult, no matter where you come from. But it seemed to me, and this could be a projection, I'm just putting this out there, but it seemed like the most difficult pieces for you to write, as a reader reading them, were the pieces about your sex work. Would you agree with that?
I would say so. I think anything to do with, I think that was the next level of my disclosure, right? I stepped forward in 2011 very comfortably as a trans woman. And then knowing for the past 3 years that I've wanted to then open up on a whole nother level about something equally as stigmatized, right? Sex work, to a mainstream audience was a deliberate decision that was a difficult one to definitely revisit or at least release. It wasn't difficult writing it. It was difficult the idea of consumption of it and the soundbiting of it. That was something I was really anxious about.
And did it worry you? I mean, did it worry you that all of this other stuff might get lost and they might go, as many people do, right for the sex?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that no one has really talked about it at all. I think people are so enamored with transition stories and trans women's bodies that no one cares about what we do with our bodies. They care what we've done to our bodies. And so what's interesting is that we come to a place where we want to be comfortable in our bodies, but no one cares about what we do with them, right, in terms of, like, sharing our bodies with other people, you know, having sex, using it to make the money that you need so you can get medical care or food or whatever. And so it's interesting that that whole part of it has not even been discussed really publicly at all, not in any of my media interviews, except a few maybe online blogs or something. But it's been completely almost erased from the intersection of this book, which is such a big part of the latter, the final third of the book.
I was going to say that. There's mm-hmm. a big chunk of it in which, first of all, you paint this incredible world of trans women sex workers in Hawaii. You know, it's practically like, you know, required reading for sociology students. I mean, there's an insider view there, and it's so rich and vivid, these stories about this community. And also about your deep ambivalence, it seems, with sex work. That you say over and over, it's like, I'm not that exploited, duped kid, but I'm not that empowered, sex positive person. I'm both, and I'm neither, and I'm in between. You constantly sort of shift back and forth. You won't stake your claim as a kind of out proud sex worker.
Yeah, and I think it's also being someone who is, you know, 30, looking back on 12 to 15 years ago. You know, looking at that teenager and seeing that there were these societal pressures that were pushing her there, but at the same time, she was also going there looking for community. Like, I was going there to look for community. I was going there to hang out with the legends in my community, to hear them talking, to listen to them gossiping, to getting their makeup tips, to, you know, where you can go to get the best hormones, to all of these things. I was gathering so much resources beyond just money. There was, like you said, there was a community there. And it is ambivalent, right? Because a lot of the women didn't want to be there, but it was where we could be and where we could exist and where we could thrive. And so that's the ambivalence, I think, you know? And so it's a lot. There's a lot of richness there.
Well, I loved your appearance on the Colbert Report. You said when you were on that you were the first openly trans person on the show. Is that true?
I believe so, yes.
Oh my gosh, that is some groundbreaking stuff. Well, here's what I want to say from one person who does media to another. The thing that I like about you is that you're incredibly disarming, which is a really important quality when you're tackling really difficult subject matter that people are uncomfortable with. You have this quality of just sort of disarming, not just Stephen Colbert, but other people, the audience, your viewer. And so it's like, we just think, oh, this is like no big deal, what we're talking about. It's totally no big deal. So I got to give you props for that.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot to me. I often say that I'm a media-facing person, right? A media-facing writer. And so for me, I always try to communicate with people, because this was my journalism training, where you communicate with people on a seventh grade level, right? Because that's where the nation is in terms of like reading and comprehension. And so on trans issues, it's even lower. And so It's vitally necessary, if I want to get the message across and actually move people to incorporate these very big radical steps in their world, right, into their lives that we as trans people have kind of, or queer people, period, have kind of already integrated so easily, right? Pronoun usage. Most people don't even, what are you talking about? I have to tell people what my pronouns are.
Right.
Really? I have to tell them that? Like, this is something that I think in the trans community, like, oh, this is so boring what she's talking about. But you have to think about the mainstream America. They're like, I would never think about having to say what my pronouns are, or even thinking about maybe not gendering my child by calling them a child. You know, maybe let's call them a child, or maybe call them my baby, maybe call them my kid. You know, and so like, these little bitty things, it makes it accessible for people, and that's something that I try to aim with my work, and that's why I have definitions in the book, and, you know, try to break down these topics and contextualizing my personal experiences. All of these things, I think, are important to communicating, especially in media, to a mainstream audience and really, like, educating them and bringing them along with us as we push forward.
He, Stephen Colbert, asked you what is the most boring part of being transgender, which was a hysterical question. I want to flip that script and say, what's the most exciting part of being trans?
You know what's so interesting? In that quote, he asked me that. I really wanted to talk about bathrooms. And talking about how we have to really, you know, I want to say like how we have to really think as trans people, especially gender nonconforming people, how we have to think about what bathroom can we use and where will we be safest. Like, it's the most boring, but also like the most anxious and exciting part of our lives, because everyone wants to talk about it. But I didn't want to like go there in that interview, because I felt like it was already dying down, so it wasn't a space to open up. But the most exciting thing for me, I think, I don't know if it's like transness, but for me, it's always writing. It's always communicating. It's always being able to empower girls like myself, girls who grew up like I did. That's the most exciting part of my life.
One of the things you write in the book, you write extensively about your parents, who you have these complex relationships with, and for a while you were solely raised by your father. For a while you were raised by your mother. You've also were really raised by your maternal grandmother for a big chunk there. But one of the things you said about your father was, our relationship is composed of love and friction, nostalgia and expectations, respect and contradictions. It does seem to me that you have made a kind of peace with some of what happened in your childhood with both of your parents. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah. I didn't want to write a revenge memoir. You know, that's usually not the best memoirs. The best memoirs are when you can reflect on your younger self and also have the same discerning eye that you have for your quote-unquote villains or antagonists, but also on yourself, right? And so for me, I wanted to write with kindness, really looking at my parents outside of me. Right, their relationships with each other, their relationship with themselves, their past failures and heartbreaks. It was necessary for me to look at them as people with their own journeys beyond just being my my mother and my father. And so when I looked at them in that way, with that kindness that I also want people to look at me and my own journey, it was very easy to write with them with love and also to heal myself and my past, you know, ideas of how they may have failed me and all of that stuff. And I realized that we all fail each other in relationships, and that's a part of it. You know, that's a part of being in relationships with people. And so I wanted to write about them as if I was in a relationship with them, and I'm trying to heal myself from that. And yeah, so I wanted to come from a place of love and clear intent on what a relationship looks like and what it did look like.
Words of wisdom. People, this is why you have to read her book, because she drops these every few pages. I swear to you, she does. Just please trust me on this and go get her book. Well, we're out of time, but I so appreciate you spending an hour of your Friday night with us, with me and with my listeners. Thank you, Janet.
Thank you so much for having me.
Janet Mock is the author of the memoir, Redefining Realness, My Path to Womanhood, Identity, Love, and So Much More, published this month by Simon & Schuster. Find out more about her at janetmock.com. Follow her on Facebook and Twitter at Janet Mock. All of these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. And you can always find me at puckerup.com and on Twitter at Tristan Taramino. Tonight's winner of a Sports Sheets prize of your very own choosing is Kit from DC, who called in. Thank you, Kit. See how easy that is, people? Kit did it. You can do it. Kit, email me at tristan@puckerup.com. Go to sportsheets.com. Pick something that you want, and we will send it to you. It's that simple. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, whose enthusiasm for this particular guest was unmatched. Segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. If you missed any part of this show or want to hear it again, you can listen on demand or download the MP3 by going to voiceamerica.com and searching for Sex Out Loud. You can also subscribe to it as a podcast on iTunes. Tune in next Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be sex educator and college speaker Shanna Katz. Shanna and I are going to talk about her many passions, including queer sex, open source sex, and sex and disability. It's going to be a fantastic, fascinating conversation that you do not want to miss. And remember, if you want to be a member of our live studio audience, where do you have to go? You have to go to CatalystCon. Go to catalystcon.com to register, and then we'll see you in DC, where we are recording shows in front of a live studio audience. You can ask questions. We give away prizes. It is going to be a great time, people. And then when you're not listening to radio shows, you can go to all this great, fantastic programming. So hopefully I'll see you all at CatalystCon next month. In the meantime, I encourage you to keep the discussion going on facebook.com/asktristan, on Twitter at sexoutloudradio, and in your own life. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.